Hi, my name is Eliane Goldstein, and you're listening to The Effect on Us.
When I went downstairs to play with the kids with whom I'd played all my life, all of a sudden they're calling me a dirty little Jew and to walk in the sidewalk where I belong.
I had the courage to say, I have to get out. I was just so infused with the will to live that I said, I don't mind leaving my parents.
Do you experience any pain from what they would do?
Every single second of my life, and I will for the rest of my life.
The Effect on Us podcast. Here's Eliane Goldstein.
The Effect on Us is a podcast for people of all ages to learn about controversial subjects and the ties it has to people nowadays. In this season, the focus of the series is the Holocaust. You'll be able to hear some of the best survival stories I've ever heard from people that went through the Second World War and learn more about the effect the Holocaust had on people from Generation 1 to Generation 3.
Did you know that only 10% of Germans who worked in Auschwitz were ever prosecuted for their war crimes? In this episode, I'm talking to Steen Metz, who comes from a very small town in Denmark where only 0.2% of the population is Jewish.
What is your name?
The first name is Steen, S-T-E-E-N, and then my last name is Metz, M-E-T-Z.
When were you born?
I was born a long, long time ago, May the 5th, 1935.
So how old does that make you now?
Are you good at math?
Yes, I am.
86.
Where were you born?
I was born in Denmark in a town called Odense, O-D-E-N-S-E, in the middle of Denmark.
Do you remember anything about your family before the war started?
I remember quite a bit before the war started. I have some fond memories of my time with my father. We lived in an apartment, so we didn't have a garden, and we went to a commune, which you may not be aware of, but you rent land, and then we grew veggie and flowers, and I enjoyed my time with my father.
What about your rest of the family?
Oh, I certainly also remember my mother, because she took me to school the very first day, and the rest of the time I would bicycle to and from school.
Was religion important to you before the war?
I'm sorry?
Was religion important to you and your family before the war started?
I'm sorry, but I don't get it. Could you slow down a little bit?
Yes. Did religion have a big significance in your family?
No, it didn't. Both my parents were Jewish. My father was brought up in the Jewish faith. My mother was not. And in the town where we lived, there were just a couple of other Jewish people. So there was no synagogue. There was no Jewish school. And most of our friends, or just about all our friends, were Christian. So since I wasn't brought up in the Jewish religion, it didn't play a major role for me.
So what was the beginning of the war like for you?
It was on April the 9th. In Denmark, the war started on April the 9th, 1940. I was almost 5 years old, and I still remember the German troops marching up and down the streets. I remember the low-flying planes flying over our buildings, and it was quite a surprise for most of the Danish people, since the Danish government had signed a non-aggression pact with Hitler, but you couldn't trust that evil man. And they still invaded Denmark and occupied Denmark for the next 5 years.
Where did you go when they started to occupy? Did you stay in Denmark or did you leave?
We stayed in Denmark. When I look back, I'm surprised that the conditions in Denmark, I would describe them as relatively with emphasis on the word relatively normal, certainly compared to other countries. There were a total of 20 countries in Europe, that were occupied. And if I had gone to school, say, in the Netherlands, I would not have been able to go to public school like I did in Denmark. My father would not have been able to practice law. So the first 3.5 years of the occupation, I'm very surprised the way I remember the conditions.
What did you do during the days?
Where was I during the day?
Yeah, like what did you do?
I went to school. We lived on the outskirts, not the suburbs, but the outskirts of the city. And I would bicycle to and from school. And I remember I tried to avoid the German soldiers. I referred to them as in their ugly green uniform. And they looked very intimidating with their guns, but they never hurt me. They never addressed me. And they never touched me.
Did you receive any anti-Semitism?
Did I personally experience anti-Semitism? Is that your question? I certainly did later on when we were arrested, but prior to that, there was very little anti-Semitism in Denmark. And in Denmark, whether you were Jewish or Lutheran or Catholic, you were first of all considered a Dane.
So you just said that you were arrested. When did that happen?
That happened on October 2nd, 1943. So it was almost 3.5 years after the Nazis invaded Denmark. And it came as a shock to my parents and certainly also to me. And you have to keep in mind that in those days, communication channels were quite different. We didn't have television, as an example. We certainly didn't have smartphones. We relied on radio and phone and newspaper. And living away from the capital, Copenhagen, where most of the Jewish people, about 95%, lived, and that's where they had a synagogue. They were very lucky. They were alerted by a German diplomat. He had ties to Denmark, some people he knew, and he alerted the Danish administration, who had taken over from the Danish government, who had resigned, and they alerted the Jewish people, and something outstanding happened in Denmark. A lot of Christian families became what I call upstanders, and they would stand up for what they thought were right, and they were hiding a lot of their Jewish friends in their homes or in hospitals and in churches. But we were arrested, and we were among the 5% of the Danish Jewish population that were arrested. The rest managed to escape to Sweden.
So what happened when you were arrested?
We got about 30 minutes to get ready, and then we were transported in a truck into the center of town. And there we were in a schoolyard, standing in a schoolyard, and there were about 60 people in total. And we were there for a couple of hours, and then later on, we were transferred into a cattle car and transported to a concentration camp.
Which concentration camp was it?
It was called Theresienstadt. Have you heard of that?
No, not yet.
T-H-E-R-E, Theresienstadt. The German version is Theresienstadt. It was located, or is located, was then Czechoslovakia. Today it's the Czech Republic. And the Czech pronunciation would be Tersen.
How old were you when you got to the camp?
I'm sorry?
How old were you when you got to the camp?
I was 8 years old.
And what happened when you got there?
When we got to the camp, we were ordered to empty our pockets. They took our cash, took jewelry, anything valuable they could find. including going through our suitcases. And my father later on told me that the Gestapo officers who arrested us had encouraged my father to bring money. And that was the first thing they took from us.
What was it like for you to be living in the camp?
It was terrible. There was a lot of uncertainty. Didn't know whether you would get enough food to eat, whether you would be transported to an extermination camp like Auschwitz-Birkenau. Anybody 16 years or older were considered adults, and they had to perform slave labor, and that included my father. And he was not used to that kind of work since he was an attorney, and he was used to being in an office or practice law or litigating in the courthouse. And suddenly he had to dig ditches in the cold weather, and he couldn't handle it. And my mother told me that he lost about half his body weight. And later on, he ended up in infirmary. And he spent, I believe, 2 to 3 months there. And eventually, the doctors and nurses, they were inmates from many different countries. They tried to save him, but they didn't have the medical instruments. And as a result, he passed away after less than 6 months in camp, and he was less and had been married to my mother for less than 10 years.
So you said the people that were 16 and older had to do work. So you were 8. So what did you do?
My mother thought it was a good idea for me to do some voluntary work, then time would pass by faster. And I became a messenger. At the age of 8, there's not much you can do. And I became a messenger. And I would transfer documents from one office to the other and messages. And I would do that a couple of hours in the morning and a couple of hours in the afternoon.
And did your mother also do voluntary work?
No, she did slave labor. She had women and men, 16 years and older. They had to do slave labor, and she had many different jobs. One was to clean floors in a big factory.
Did you stay in the camp till the end of the war?
For the entire time? Is that your question?
No, till the end.
I'm sorry?
Till the end of the war.
Did I stay in the camp till the end of the war? Is that your question?
Yes.
We spent 18 months in the camp. And we were very, very lucky to be liberated by the white buses. They came from Sweden. Sweden was a neutral country. And they saved about 15,000 Jewish people from many different camps. And we were liberated on April the 15th. So, yes, we were liberated before the war ended.
So what did you do after you were liberated?
We went back to my hometown, and I went back to school, and I was very lucky to be able to go back to school with my old classmates. There was no education, no schooling allowed in the camp, in any concentration camps. And I did get some private lessons. I got some private lessons when I got back. And then I had left in the beginning of third grade, and I started fifth grade with all my friends.
Did living in a concentration camp affect you after the war?
Say that again.
Did living in a concentration camp affect you after the war?
Excuse me just for a second. I was very lucky, and I think it was because I was so young that I didn't have any nightmares like a lot of people. My mother's nerves, as an example, were impacted by the stay in the camp. Her hearing deteriorated because there was some heavy bombardment where we were. But I consider myself very lucky. I was concerned after having lost my father that if something happened to my mother, what would happen to me? So I had some abandonment issues. But other than that, I was quite lucky.
How was life for you after the war?
What was it like after the war?
Yeah.
I was just telling you that I went back to my school, and I played with my friend. So that was not your question?
I meant like living with your mother.
In the beginning, it was very difficult because the apartment we lived in had been rented out, so we had nowhere to stay. We stayed with friends. It was very difficult. We were a nice little family of three. Now it's just my mother and I. That was a difficult transition. And fortunately, we had many good friends that helped us out. And as I mentioned earlier, there was very little anti-Semitism in Denmark. And we didn't experience any anti-Semitism when we returned. On the contrary, our friends couldn't do enough for us. But I want to emphasize, that's a very unique situation in Denmark. I wouldn't have liked to return to a country like Poland, where they had a lot of anti-Semitism.
Did you move out of Denmark?
Yes, we moved back to Denmark. As I mentioned, we moved back to my hometown.
No, like, did you move out of Denmark?
Did I move out of Denmark?
Yes, after the war.
I continued to go to school in Denmark, high school, commercial college. Then I wanted to see part of the world, because Denmark is a very little country, the size of Rhode Island. And I joined a Danish company, food company. They did a lot of export. And I had an opportunity first to work for them in England after special training in Denmark. And then I went to Canada and eventually United States. And I've been in the United States since 1962. In Canada, I lived in Toronto. And I got married in Toronto in 1962, before we were transferred. I was transferred by the Danish company to the United States.
Is there anything that you want to add before we wrap up? Any messages that you want to tell people?
I'm glad you asked that question. I'd like to add a couple of things. One would be never give up hope. And I think we learned that from our time in camp. There were people that gave up hope. And as a result, they didn't make it. My mother was very tenacious. And I like to think that I inherited some of that. Also, be kind to each other. Respect each other. The opposite of what happened with Hitler. He was a very, very evil man. And was responsible for 6 million Jewish lives that perished and millions of others. It doesn't mean you have to love each other, but treat other people the way you want to be treated yourself and not the way you were treated or we were treated by Hitler.
Is that it?
I have no, unless you have other questions, I have no more to add, unless you have any questions.
No, I think you were very thorough with your story. Let me just try to think if there's anything at all. Okay, what was the food like in the concentration camp?
Very little of it. It was terrible. As an example, we got a lot of soups, very often what they call potato soup, which was boiled water with some potato peel in it. And we would stand in line. I call it the soup kitchen. At lunchtime, maybe for 30 or 40 minutes. And we tried to get to the bottom of the kettle so at least we could get some potato peel, some nourishment. But we got very little food, very little for breakfast, not much for dinner. Not only didn't we get much food, but we were able, it wasn't very nutritious.
And where did you sleep?
I'm sorry?
Where did you sleep?
Where did I sleep?
Yeah.
Are you talking about the camp?
Yeah.
We slept in barracks. And somehow my mother was able to persuade the Nazis that I could stay with her. I was 8 years old. It was very unusual, but I have met other survivors who stayed with their mother, but I never met anybody who stayed with their father.
I think that's it. Thank you so much for letting me speak with you.
Okay.
Join me next time when I talk to Rena Quint, who had to pretend to be a boy to survive the war. If you like this episode, please like and subscribe and tell your friends. This is Eliane Goldstein. Tune in next time to The Effect on Us. And remember, history will not repeat itself. Bye.